Hello?
Hello there.
Cheers.
Cheers, yes. So this is quite exciting. I love punctuality. We have 66 watching already. Oh, and so this is the part where it auto-tweets from the .NET Foundation account. Then I retweet it from the ASP.NET account.
I love how you
And I
talk about
also
it's like you talk about it like it's some like
the tweet, it
semi-sentient
has a life of its own, right?
system that's like leading us through our community stand-up.
Yes. Oh, Chris is there, Ed's there. Happy to be. I will be showing posts from both of you. That is exciting. Hello, Shane. All these people, all our friends showing up. This is great excitement. So I'm so excited to jump into the community news. But I realize we probably should wait a second. There's James. So this is like a
Monkey
little,
love.
yeah, party. So this is the Blazor show. We have Dan and Steve on.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Steve is our
There.
disembodied voice today. We don't get to see Steve. It's like a seance. Steve, are you with us? Are you there, Steve?
I'm going to be with you intermittently. I will be muting myself as much as I can while I cough and splutter. Not
Oh.
completely well.
I heard Steve was growing his hair out, and so he just doesn't during the transitional phase.
We've all been doing that, right, John? Like
Yes.
we're
Cool. Well, let me see. You're 75. You know what? I want to dig into the community links. I think it's time.
all let's give the community some love.
All right, I'm going to share my screen. Let's just do this. Because
Awesome.
I'm honestly, I love community, and I also cannot wait to see all the stuff you're going to be showing off. So this will move this off the screen. And can you see my screen here?
I can see your screen. I can never.
Awesome.
What about? But that's just me. What about the masses? Can they?
Yeah, it all works. I see it on Twitch.
Awesome. All right, go
Here
ahead.
we are. Okay, so this is cool. Elon sent this link over. This is Vaser. This is a community project, and it is a look at Blazor, like Razor Pages support using Visual Basic.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, so this is pretty cool. So I went through these steps. You download a V6, and then it adds a new project type, and here you've got Visual Basic views. So I actually went through and did this. I've got their demo app running.
And it's using
This was
the XML literals, like the VB XML literals thing. It's
it
like
is.
JSX, except it's like VBX. Is that already a thing? Is there already a VBX? Did we already do a VBX?
I don't know.
I don't think I've heard of a VBX. VB, no, he called it VBXML. He's got a VBXML
You're
tag.
right, you're right, VBXML.
VBXML.
So here, yeah, there's this like virtual node. He has you. So when you originally open the project, it'll show using the VB editor, and then he has some tips here where you go through and open with the HTML editor, and then you've got HTML editing syntax. The actual change here is relatively small. It's adding in the view. Where is it? My eyes are not working here. A Vaser view provider. And then other than that, standard VB code, and among all my browsers here, just kind of a standard iterating and showing students. So if you've got, I think this is interesting. If you've got a VB, a shop with a lot of VB expertise and are more comfortable with VB, this is interesting to take a look at. Again, community project, neat thing.
And that's all server-side rendered? Is that how that's
Yes.
working? That's a server-side rendering tech. So it's like
It's
Razor-ish, but sort of inverted, where you have your markup inside your VB server-side rendering with ASP.NET Core. All right, that's cool.
All right, cool. On to the next. So last week we had the workers show with Glenn and Brady, and so here's actually a write-up of using workers with Azure Container Instances. So that was, I believe this may be either an exact, an exact demo he showed or kind of, you know, filling in the blanks. There was one thing that didn't completely work during because he wasn't able to share his screen. So I think that's actually what we're seeing here. So this is pretty cool. Just going through creating a worker, deploying to Azure Container Instances. So neat to see the workers just chugging along and then the ability to run this in a lightweight container instance. Neat. So Gunnar is showing here file uploads in an ASP.NET Core integration test. Of course, integration tests can be really useful for making sure that your application code works with other dependencies. And a file upload is a great example of a case where you're, you know, working with the file system and doing something that goes outside of your application code. So here's showing how to do that, including making files available. The simple thing that I always screw this up and have to, you know, why is that file not there? So making the file available. So here it kind of goes through and explains how to do that. Nice. Here's a tweet from Ben. It just keeps going on. Every time I'm like, wow, this is the last big, amazing update on performance for ASP.NET Core. Here is yet one more enormous one. So tweet-based updates on huge updates. This one is mostly from reusing headers. So I forget the actual title for it, but you know, using static headers, I believe.
Wow. So. Which benchmark this one is? Is this the plain text benchmark? Do you know?
I don't know. Seeing numbers that high, I would think so.
I don't know. Like plain text has been so heavily optimized already.
Yeah.
You would have thought that there wouldn't be much to left to grab, but
I'm not sure, and I dug through it when this came out. This actually is from the 10th, so almost a week ago.
For people that aren't familiar with like the benchmarks that we work with the Tech Empower benchmarks, and there's a whole bunch of them. Like there's one where you just try and spew out like "Hello World" as fast as you can. There's others where you like try to return a JSON payload, and that's one of the reasons why we're working on a new JSON stack in .NET Core 3.0 to get some good optimizations there. Hi, James.
Hi, how's it going? Silent producer.
Just ignore the man in the room. You're always welcome to hang out with us, James. If you want to come in and talk about Blazor, it's all good. and then there's even ones that involve like the database and such. So we do optimize different parts of the stack for those different benchmarks, and so it's be interesting to see which. This one's, I think that's plain text.
This one's a 7 million here.
Yeah.
So the ones that Ben was tweeting about were showing 4 million. So that's going to be one of the others.
Probably. Yeah. And though you can see they're all, in fact, those are also heavily optimized at the top of the stack in the plain text one, that they're all like, they're probably hitting some bottleneck. Like they're all kind of stopping at the same point.
Networking. But
we're right up there. We're in there. Like where are we? .NET is right.
Well, here it's number 7.
Number 7. There you go. And then we've been working through the other ones to push ourselves up the rankings.
And Ben may have been pointing also to the, you can also see, they have now a one where you can see, I forget what they call it, but you can see constant benchmarks. Like they're basically running all the time. So they do official benchmark runs on a regular basis, but you can also see the basically like they just run all the time now.
Oh, cool. There's the Olympics that happen every now and then, and then there's just everyone's like own personal time trials that you can always just post whenever you want to see them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Good stuff. Two posts here on authentication, and specifically this one is on Azure B2C Auth. So I actually ran through this recently. We've been using this with membership for the .NET Foundation. So this goes through and shows how to do that. So this is a walkthrough on setting up with Azure Active Directory B2C. There are several kind of steps to go through and do this, and So in this post, this is showing the hookup. This one's a little more high level, and this one going on. This one from Shahed is a like way in depth one. So both these posts are good. I was happy to see both these come up, and And there were several lessons learned as we went through and set this up. I worked on this with Oren Novotny. Oren wrote most of the complex code for it. And there's, you know, it works well. It was nice to be able to kind of outsource the identity provider bit. There were some things where there was a learning curve for me in terms of getting this set up. Uh-huh. But yeah, so Shahed walking through in detail. He's done these weekly posts, which I deeply appreciate. So this is a really nice one here, digging through. So Shahed's post focuses a little more on your application code. And so you'll see here, I'll run down here, some of the things actually as far as like requiring authentication, configuring that. The actual, so here, for instance, you know, where you can toggle and turn that on. There's actually in the code we've set up, there's other things you can look at as far as, you know, log out and keep me signed in and that kind of thing. So you can go pretty deep with this.
You know, the thing I've always loved about the idea behind Azure ADB to see is like, you know, all the concerns with if you use ASMIC Core Identity yourself, then, well, the passwords are stored in your database. So it's mm-hmm. your responsibility to make sure that those things, I mean, we do a lot of the work, the heavy lifting for you to make sure that those passwords are stored securely, but it's your problem now, right? Because it's in your app. Whereas when you use Azure ADB to see, they're handling a lot of that for you. They do a bunch of like fancy AI smarts to detect like people trying to, you know, brute force passwords and stuff like that. So you get a lot of like, you know, additional benefits around instead of trying to manage all that, those, you know, very sensitive security concerns, identity yep. concerns yourself, you just let a service handle it for you. I do, there were things also, did you find that it was a little hairy to set up? Is that kind of what I was hearing, that there were some things that were?
Yeah. And you know, some steps, some things I found needed to be managed via PowerShell. Or needed to be toggled via PowerShell, that kind of thing. The standard thing where you learn a new technology that you're not quite as not as up to date with, where I would find a blog post that was maybe a year or two old and things have changed since then.
Yeah.
There are also a few little oddities as far as if somebody already has their own their MSA, their Microsoft account set up with their own Azure Active Directory, then you can run into cases where it gets confused, like where it'll try and use the wrong one.
Where the service itself gets confused about who that identity
exactly.
is.
Exactly, oh, okay. Yeah. Overall, pretty good. And it is neat, like you're saying, to be able, like you can set password policies, you can set up two-factor auth, you can, you know, require password reset. You can basically like do all that admin kind of stuff without having to, like, exactly like you're saying, I don't want those passwords. I never want to store a password. Well, and so
when we did the original integration with B2C, like we had envisioned that there would be a Visual Studio tooling flow where you can file new projects, say I want Azure AD B2C, and then it could handle provisioning for you, setting up the tenant and wiring it all up. Today, you have to kind of bounce back and forth mm-hmm. between Visual Studio and the Azure portal to get everything going. If that's a scenario that people are interested, let us know. And that's something we can, you know, reach back out to the identity org and see if that's a scenario that we can make easier.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's I definitely, having gone through this myself, for instance, things like making sure the callbacks are set up, making sure like setting up things like keep me signed in, stuff like that. Those are definitely things where, like you're saying, there's a little bounce back and forth. So
yeah,
cool. And yeah, definitely do let us know in the comments if you have thoughts on that. Okay. This is interesting from Janik. This is he's using JavaScript services, but he's created a template using Create React App. And the idea here is a very minimal setup. So it doesn't have all the TypeScript and server-side or SSR, I forget what that is. I wonder if that's hot reload.
Server-side rendering.
Server-side rendering, thanks.
Yeah.
So anyhow, this it's always interesting to see an opinionated template. Honestly, I don't have an opinion on this. Like I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm interested just kind of as as these come out.
I wonder if this is sort of a reaction to the us adding TypeScript to our React template, Steve.
Could be.
we had to make a choice. We didn't want to support both, so we're like, well, should we do TypeScript or no TypeScript? And we went with TypeScript. And I know not everyone uses TypeScript. I know that's hard to believe, but but fortunately the community has stepped in here. What's that?
We did use TypeScript originally, and then loads of people told us off and said that was the wrong thing to do, and the React community was basically not adopting it. So we moved the TypeScript and standardized, and then the React community did adopt TypeScript. So we re-added it and re-standardized. I guess, you know, people will always have their own different ways of doing stuff, which is great.
Yeah, well, and I think that is neat that here it's possible to have an opinionated template. But then, you know, I did dig through the code, and it is using JavaScript services, and it is, you know what I mean? So things are factored in a way where people don't have to say, use the Microsoft provided template or do it all yourself. You know, this is a way to say, well, I like this and this, but I want to take these parts out. And so, yeah, so I'm interested to, you know, partly I like sharing links with this as people are starting on something. And then there's going to be some people watching that are writing React apps all day long, and they can dig in and they can, you know, either get feedback or say, hey, this is exactly what I wanted or whatever. So cool. All right, Andrew Locke, two interesting posts. These are on avoiding, I don't know if either of you folks saw this. I thought this was an interesting series. This is on, so the problem he shows is if you've got something like an int ID or a GUID ID. So here he has both a product, or excuse me, an order ID and a user ID are both GUIDs. And he shows a case where you're accepting both both of those GUIDs, and it's possible to pass them in the wrong order. So he actually, I'm spoiling the surprise for you because this is written a bit as a quiz, like, do you spot the code error? And the code error is that you're actually passing them in, swapping the order, and you're passing in the user ID as the order ID and vice versa. So that's kind of the problem, is that they're not strongly typed as IDs. And this isn't directly an ASP.NET issue. Like, this kind of code problem could occur in any application, right? But there are some ASP.NET specific places where this comes up, things like model binding and JavaScript serialization and stuff. So then so he goes through and, you know, talks about this issue where if you're just using primitives, they're not strongly typed, and you're not able to tell if an int, what an int is. Is it an order ID? Is it a number of monkeys? What is it, you know? So he talks about using strongly typed IDs and creating an order ID class. So this is, you know, he goes through and shows this off, and then talks about how, you know, he's not totally happy with this, and some places where you run into issues with things like binding. So then, part two, where he goes through and talks about a more kind of complex one or more sophisticated one, and shows things like, creating your binders. Fixing things like JavaScript, JSON APIs, making it so that your JSON, you know, using a JSON converter so that your internal implementation doesn't mess with the serialization. And then later on in here, he shows also for things like route constraints.
It almost seems like it could be a language feature. Aren't there some languages that have a feature like this where, like,
you're right.
They have strings, but they're like, but you can say that, but this is not just any old string. This is a, you know, a password string or whatever. Isn't that a thing? Like, what the?
Yes, it is. It is.
Oh, so, all the F# guys are like, F#.
Yeah. Well, there is that. So just wrapping up on this, and then that's kind of the dramatic conclusion, I guess.
Oh, sorry.
So here he goes through, and his solution here does end up with a bunch of boilerplate code, and so he shows a snippet that he's created that creates that boilerplate for you. So, you know, my thought on this was like, hey, yeah, isn't there a way to, I don't know, do something smart with generics or whatever? And like you said, everybody that's ever used F# is like face palming and saying this is easy. I did have, Daniel, who works on the Facebook React stuff, he on Twitter told me, like, that is a language feature other languages have called opaque type aliases. And so basically with that, you say, like, I'm creating a user ID it's an opaque type of an int, and it doesn't have to do anything boilerplate. It behaves as an int, but you can strongly type it. And there actually is a language feature suggestion going back to, I believe, 2015. And it's kind of been floating around, and I don't see, it looks like it's unscheduled. And then people also talked about source generators as a solution here, which I guess is an upcoming C# feature. So, yeah, okay. So I'm interested, and this also partly was, I was curious, and I'm interested to see with any of these things, people will say, like, oh, yeah, I solved this 3 years ago, and here's a smart way to do it. So
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Nothing with having a smart way to do it that's already been done. That's all.
Yeah. Good. So that is interesting. And that's something where I was like, man, is there some way to, like, even attribute an ID and have that kind of flow through, you know? And so it would be an int, but it would be attributed as a order ID, you know? And, but I don't know. This is a place where I'm like, yeah, I guess I wish I knew the in-depth plumbing of the type system a bit more. All right. So Chris Sainte, who I believe was on the chat. So this was a cool post on getting started with TypeScript for JS Interop in Blazor. So Blazor has support for JS Interop. And here he's talking about using TypeScript, which I think makes, sense. It's nice to be able to write C# and have strongly typed code for everything. And then the places where you do need to use JavaScript, it would be great to have the strong typing and the other language features you get in TypeScript as well. So here he's talking about converting code over and, using TypeScript, and then how he set up his build in order to do that. So, setting up, things like your TypeScript tools and stuff, nice. TypeScript compilation. So, yeah, I thought that was cool. All right. And yes, we've transitioned to the Blazor part of the links. So I always, I have to point this out. This is the Blazor community resources on blazor.net. Tons of stuff. Every time I go back here, there's just more and more. So it's really cool to see that it's updated. If you want to see what's new, here's a trick you can do is you click on this improve this doc link, and that takes you over to the GitHub repo, and this is just Markdown, and you can do things like, for instance, here this shows where Mahul showed updates for the Dev Express, both the training and the Razor components that they've contributed. So you can go through and you can take a look at all the kind of updates here. Blazor revealed book, it's cool to kind of go through and get that kind of updates on what's changed.
Yeah, I've been reading through Blazor revealed. Making sure I know Blazor stuff. Yeah, I just got a copy of it from the author. It was cool.
Very cool. Very cool. So to wrap up here, there's a bunch of new components that we've seen released, and so I just wanted to point some of those out. Dev Express. So they blogged about some new components. So this is an early access preview. This talks about, explaining what Blazor is, explaining the client and server side models, talking about Razor components, and then ending with, here are the Dev Express UI for Blazor and Razor components.
Woo, nice. Yeah.
Yep. So, and a very cool demo, you can go through and you can take a look. So this has all the different, grids and pagers and editors and all that stuff. So good stuff. And I'm not sure, it's taking a bit to load, and that might be my fault. So if I go through here,
are people seeing the Dev Express demo? Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There it is. So I, so neat to see, I'm not even sure if you folks saw this as a huge value, but the component model that is available with Blazor and Razor components is really interesting, and it unlocks a lot of things that that vendors used to provide historically for .NET developers. And it's really cool to see, you know, building. It's cool that I can go and build a component, but building a full featured component is a lot of work. And supporting things like theming and localization and, you know, in-depth reporting features and all that kind of stuff. And so it's cool that component vendors who, you know, have done this for years and have learned the hard lessons, it's cool to see when they jump in and provide, you know, professional implementations.
And you just drop it in and use it. Like, this is this is exactly what I was hoping would happen with Blazor, that we would, you know, start build up a, you know, an ecosystem of component libraries that you can just reach out into NuGet and find them and add them to your app and build up a rich UI in a really easy composable way. That was what one of the things we were trying to accomplish. We've had that with older .NET stacks, and I think with you know, with ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core, we kind of had lost a little bit of that sort of composability, and we've been trying to pull that back with Blazor.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Yeah. Here's an example. You know, things like working with a large data source. You know, so there's with all these, you know, pivot grid and a grid, and people are doing this is using over a gigabyte of data, right? So those kind of advanced component scenarios, it's really, really something that I messed with building these a long time ago. Oh man, this was with WinForms apps, and building a full featured component that's performant and stuff is not easy. Yeah. So there's a lot of work behind the scenes that goes on here.
And I believe the DevExpress ones, that they are like their live site is done using the server side Blazor. Like, it's all they're hosting their components for that site on the server, I believe. And then all the UI interactions that you see with their DevExpress site, with their demo site, is all being handled over that WebSocket connection, over a SignalR connection.
Ah, cool.
It's interesting that, like, I was trying it out. I was like, okay, how much can you tell? Like, how much can you feel, you know, a little latency? And it's surprisingly good. Like, it's really good. Like, I still am always surprised when I try out a server-side Blazor based app, how natural it feels, even though all those UI interactions are actually going over the wire.
Yeah. And it's, I love the model that I can toggle between them relatively easily too. So I could develop using the server side and then switch over to client side, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Sync Fusion. So here, here's this, Sync Fusion. They just introduced these on the 10th. These are this, you know, every post I've noticed, the three vendors I'm showing off here, all three kind of, they need to explain the, what the model is and explaining what Blazor is. So introducing both the models. So then this talks, they've got over 60 UI controls. So this walks through getting them set up, how to set those up and install them. And there's a GitHub repo with the source code. And then here's an example, so you can go through and you can see the different controls. You can, you know, navigate through. I love these, you know, for a component, I'd love to be able to see an actual component. How does it function and how does it do things like work with different themes, right? So here's some of those. If I can go in, I liked there that there's an example of high contrast, right? So those sorts of different cases, you know, where maybe I could see these being used, you know, when I go and pick up a rental car or something, I would love to not see people typing away on those terrible old consoles, or you know, I would love to see some of those converted. So maybe I could see somebody using a high contrast theme and pick up my rental
it's
car.
It's also for accessibility, right? Like, for people
absolutely.
Who,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who need the extra contrast. I think, so from my understanding, forgive me if I got this wrong, I think the Sync Fusion guys, like, what they did is they had a bunch of components that were written in JavaScript already, and then they used JavaScript Interop to shrink wrap them in as Blazor components. I believe the implementation strategy they took. I think the DevExpress folks and Telerik, I think, did a similar thing. They went pure .NET IL. I think they like implemented new components all in, you know, C# and .NET. So it's interesting to see those different strategies. But if you have existing assets in JavaScript that you want to just use, like, you can do that and make them easily accessible from Blazor apps as just a, you know, again, drop in NuGet package, wire it up, and you've got a component.
Ah, that's really good to know. Okay, so yeah, like it does call that out here that those are, so they've exposed these JavaScript components to Blazor developers, and you can use them using C# code to turn them on to work with them.
Yeah, I mean, I believe they are. They're just, there are components just under the covers in their guts. Their implementation is just their existing JavaScript implementations. From a .NET developer, you can't tell. Like, as far as you know, it's just a component. It's a thing that you use in a Blazor app. It's .NET, C#. But under the covers, they were able to leverage their existing JavaScript assets, which is great. I mean, that's what that JavaScript interrupt mechanism is for.
Yeah, very cool. All right. So then Ed, who's on the chat here and has been providing links and stuff, and also has a really cool show. He has a Twitch show. I believe it's on Fridays. So where he's been doing a lot of... Whoa, my audio cut out. I hope I'm still there. Okay. So Ed's been doing Twitch presentations on Telerik, on Blazor, sorry.
Yeah.
So here's a recent post on grid component basics. There's been a series where they've been talking about the Telerik controls for Blazor. So this is walking through setting that up. So this is kind of a more in-depth, you know, all the things you can tweak and set up with a grid. And then again, this is their you know, this is theirs. So there's some pretty fun ones here. There's like animations. There are things like, you know, so like there's also grids. And I think another really interesting thing is charts. Charting is something that, you know, having a chart in your application that works well is really helpful, especially, you know, a dashboard or whatever. Charts really are helpful. And again, here, I love this playing with the different themes here. So, you know, Bootstrap and Material and Default. So, that's kind of my wrap up of my community links. And as always, I'd love if you've got others you'd love to, you know, like to share, let me know. And I will share the link for these in the show notes and also in the chat. And back to you.
Back to me. All right. So I guess we want to talk about some what's new with Blazor. Like what's happening? What have we been doing since we shipped .NET Core 3.0 Preview 3 and Blazor 0.9? So we're going to show a few things for that. I see some people in the chat are asking, are we checking the chat? And yes, we see everything that you write, every word. So feel free to chat away. We want to hear what you guys think about this stuff. So we've been working on the next update to .NET Core 3.0, which is Preview 4, which should ship imminently, like soon, hopefully very soon. I mean, knock on wood. We'll don't have exact date to share with you, but we're pretty much done with the Preview 4 bits, and of course, along with it, the next Blazor update. So that's what I want to show you a little bit now. So I'm going to switch over to my laptop. Hopefully you guys can all see that. Now down here at the bottom, I hope you can see all my Visual Studios. Like, I'm very proud of this. I've got like, they're in order of ascending previewness and like descending stability, of course. So like this first one is, that's VS 2019. And then I think this one's the preview channel. And then I've got like our internal preview channel that we use for like dog fooding. And then I've got this crazy, like what a random dev build of Visual Studio 2019 of the next preview update. So let's use the craziest one, I think is what we'll do for this set of demos. I'll show you the latest, greatest bits. I also have the latest nightly build, at least, well, pretty recent nightly build of .NET Core 3.0 installed. If you want to get this yourself, these are all public. I don't know if people know how to get the latest builds of .NET Core 3.0, but the way I usually do it, I usually start on the, you go to .NET Core SDK. Core-SDK, that's the magic URL, just a repo on GitHub. And then down below, you'll see this grid, which has all the .NET Core build status. The first column is like the latest stuff that's in master, and that's actually, if you look, you can see that's actually already gone to Preview 5. But the second column, those are the latest Preview 4 builds. Like those are the, know, candidate release builds for Preview 4. So you can just check on the installer there. It looks like I'm a couple builds old. I'm on 2.16 and the latest one's 2.18. But we're getting pretty close to being done with that. So I've installed that. I'm on the preview channel of VS 2019. That's important. If you're on just the stable channel, the release channel for 2019, the release channel doesn't pick up preview versions of .NET Core anymore. Like that used to be the case. It used to be you just installed a preview and VS would pick it up. They stopped doing that. In the stable releases of VS, you have to go check a checkbox in your settings someplace for it to pick up preview versions of the .NET Core SDK. So we actually recommend, like with .NET Core 3.0 and with Blazor, you should be on the preview channel. Just get on the preview channel, stay up to date for now. That's the bits that you'll want to use with Blazor. And as you can see, these things install side by side. I've got like, you know, ridiculous number of VSs installed on my machine, and I've never had any issue. Works great. Okay, so let's take a look at some stuff. We wanted to go to the crazy random build of Visual Studio, file new project. And let's talk about Blazor. So Blazor is actually, let me call this Blazor app one, I think, is now basically in the box in .NET Core 3.0. Now, when we started Blazor as an experiment, we played around with alternative hosting models. Like we started with hosting Blazor apps directly in the browser on WebAssembly. And then we did some experiments with what if you could host the components on the server, but you managed all the UI interactions over a SignalR connection. And we called that server-side Blazor. And that didn't have a WebAssembly dependency. And so actually it was easier for us to ship that first and just go ahead and get finish the component model, support a server-side hosting model, and just get those bits into people's hands. We asked the community if that was something they were interested in, and about half of our Blazor users said, yeah, that sounds great. In many cases, people said, I actually would prefer that model for a variety of reasons. Some people like that the fact that their code stays on the server. Some people like the fact that it doesn't require WebAssembly in the browser. You can use older browsers with server-side Blazor. A bunch of reasons, but we decided to go ahead and ship it. Now, when we moved it into .NET Core 3.0, we decided that we had to give it a new name. And the part of the reason for that was, well, Blazor was this experimental thing that was running on WebAssembly, and we didn't want to put something that was, you know, experimental into .NET Core 3.0. .NET Core 3.0 was a shipping product. So at the time we said, we should probably give it a new name. So we started calling it ASP.NET Core Razor Components. That unfortunately caused quite a bit of confusion in the ecosystem. Sorry. I'm sorry, everyone. It was with good intentions. Very few people can figure out when do you refer to Razor Components and when do you refer to Blazor. So we've decided to, you know, revert on that one. Let's go back and just start calling everything Blazor. Now, there is one thing that also made that decision a lot easier, which is the end of the experiment is in sight. That Blazor as just an experiment, you know, something that we're playing around with, is pretty much done. I'm not going to say this is the official announcement right now, but I think we're about ready to ship our first official Blazor preview release, something that is on an actual roadmap to ship as a support product. And by Blazor in this context, I mean Blazor on WebAssembly, .NET in the browser running on WebAssembly. That we are really close to doing that. So that also made the decision easier to say, okay, Blazor's a thing. Let's just call it Blazor across the board. There's Blazor on the server, Blazor on the client. So you can see now the template in Visual Studio says Blazor server side for the what used to be the Razor components template is now Blazor server side in this latest release. We've done that in the SDK, on the CLI. We've also done it in Visual Studio. The Visual Studio changes is coming in the next preview update to VS 2019 16.1. That should come out hopefully later this month. If you're on the preview channel of VS 2019, that's great. You should be there. Initially, when .NET Core 3.0 Preview 4 comes out, you may see it still show up as Razor components, and that's just because we need to do a VS update to get the strings in VS to change. So that will happen with the next update to the preview channel. You'll see this flip over to server side Blazor. But don't freak out if you see it still show up as Razor components. It's the same template. The strings just haven't changed in Visual Studio with the 16.1 preview 1 release. It will update with preview 2. So hopefully in just like a few weeks, you'll see server-side Blazor. So let's go ahead and create one of those and take a look at the updated template. All right.
People are noticing something interesting in the when Razer components.
Yeah. Let's go back. Did you notice the cool icon? You see it? Purple flame.
People did, and they love it.
What do people think? You like it? It's so I don't know if like the it's a I don't know if it's an at sign in there. I don't know if people get that. Like this, that's you know, when you write Razer code, you use the at sign, so it's an at with a purple flame. That's new. We've updated given an icon to all the Blazor templates and also to the V6. So yeah, it's pretty hot. Literally. Okay. So what does the template look like now? Hopefully you'll notice that the server side Blazor template's been cleaned up. Like before, we had a components folder, and there was some weird stuff in the product file to say that CSHTML files could still be used as components. We've now cleaned everything up. It's .razor as the file extension across the board now for all of your components. There's no longer a separate components folder. The server side Blazor template's been cleaned up to align with the client side Blazor template. So that's cool. But if you look in these files, they all look the same as they've always looked. Like this is the standard counter component that we've always had. You know, fetch data for like fetching the weather forecast data. That's all the same. Let me just go ahead and run the app to show you that yes, this is in fact building and running. We'll get the browser up so we can see some pixels and close some tabs. Yeah, okay. So same stuff that we've been showing forever. You know, we got a counter that you can click on, fetch data that fetches the data from on the server and then renders this table. This is all running server side. This isn't the WebAssembly template. This is the Blazor server side template over SignalR. Okay, so that's all been nicely cleaned up. You'll also, well, we'll get to this in a bit, but you'll notice there is still a CSHTML file in the template. What is that? Well, that's just actually a normal Razor page, like you would have in an ASP.NET Core app. And so it's CSHTML as opposed to .razor because it's not a component. But this is what's being used to actually host the server-side Blazor app. That this is where the code lives for wiring up the bootstrapping script that sets up the SignalR connection, and also the code for saying here's where I want my Blazor root Blazor component to render on the page. We'll talk a little bit more about this in a second about what this is doing because there's some interesting stuff in there. But I want to show you some of the new tooling improvements that we've been working on. One thing that's nice is how you can how you bring components into scope. How the compiler now resolves components. We've aligned components with the way you normally would think about types. Like types are normally based off of namespaces. You reference some assembly that has types. If the namespace is in scope, then you can use that type. If it's not in scope, well, you can still use the type, but you just have to use the full name of the type. We've done the same thing now with components. So if I want to add a counter component onto this page, I can start typing counter, and you'll see that the completions that are being offered me are both the just counter, which is the the type name for the counter component, or the full name of the counter type, blazorapp1.pages.counter, and both work. Like let's try the new version where you put the namespace qualified version of the type. If we go back to the app and we'll just refresh, talk about this UI in a second. This is interesting. The attempting to reconnect. And if we go to the homepage, you can see, yeah, we've got a counter component on the homepage. Both syntaxes work just fine, so don't freak out if you're like, oh, but I like the shorter syntax. Well, yeah, of course that works because the namespace is in scope. So if I save this now, go back, let's refresh the app. I should now have two counter components, and yes, I do, okay? So the way this is working now is the using statements that you have in scope for your app or whatever namespaces are in scope, those are used to resolve which components can be used on that page. You know, to really drive this home, let's add a component class library to this solution. So I'm gonna add a new project. Let's go into the ASP.NET Core. Let's call this components, component lib one. And I'm just gonna create a Razor class library. Razor class libraries are class libraries that are set up with the Razor SDK so they can compile things like views and pages and also components. So in there, I've got a new class library project added to my solution. I'm going to go ahead and delete this areas folder. I don't need that. That has a bunch of Razor pages stuff that I'm not going to use. I'm just going to add a component. It's a simple way to do that. I'm just going to add a class, and I'm going to call it mycomponent1.razor, and then delete all the content. Okay, so let's add a little content in here, mycomponent1, and let's add a little Razor syntax, just so this component does something interesting. What do we want to do? Let's give it a couple of parameters. I'm going to need a namespace to do that. So at using Microsoft ASP.NET Core.Components. Great, and then let's add a parameter here for, what I'm gonna do is just gonna have a component that like generates a list of items based on a message that you specify and a count that you specify. So let's add a property here, which will be the count. By default, it'll do one, and parameters generally should not be public, so I'm gonna remove the public thing. Let's add another parameter, which will be a string, and that'll be the message that I'm gonna repeat. And by default, let's have it be repeat me. Something like that. Okay, and again, this shouldn't be public. And then up above, let's just implement the logic for our component. Let's add an unordered list. And then for to count, great. And then we'll add a list item in here and we'll just print the message. Okay, so I've got a component there. It's in a class library. Let's use it from our app. I'm gonna add a reference to this component. To this component library. So I'm now referencing the assembly. So the type my component one should now be a scope as long as the namespace is in scope. Let's see if that works. If I go back to my app's index page and start typing my component one, you can see by default, the namespace hasn't been specified as a using, but I can still specify the full type name by default. There we go. Let's see, let's put count equals 5 and message equals, do it again. Okay, save that. And if we go back to the app, let it rebuild, we should see, hopefully, there's our my component one showing up. So I don't have to, like before you had to like add tag helper and specify the assembly and where you wanted to import components from, that's all gone. Like it's now just assembly references and type names and normal using statements. If I don't want to have to specify the full name of the type here, I just add a using statement. So that using component, component lib one, and then I can, in addition to doing, the full name of the type, I can now just specify my component one. So that should work as well. Let's make sure that it does. So count, let's do 3. And what should we do for message? Yo, that way we should have yo, yo, yo. Okay, go back and we should see the component show up again. Awesome, yep. So now we got two my components. One using the just the type name, one using the fully qualified type name. So that's a
so we got a few questions come in. Do you mind if I jump in and ask those real quick?
Okay, yeah.
All right, so question is, so I'm not sure exactly what this one means here. Is there still a lingering issue with pre-rendering and events?
I'm gonna talk about that. We will get to that.
Okay.
So we'll talk about pre-rendering this app. Just give me 1 second. I wanna show one more thing. What, is there another, I'm gonna put pause on that one. I'll come back to it.
Okay, there are a few others. Can you alias namespaces to avoid collisions?
That's a great question. I think so. Like, see, at using, equals, does this work? Yeah, that seems to work. And then I don't know if it will pick it up here. Will it pick it up here? Ooh, no, it doesn't look like we honor that yet. Steve, am I doing that right?
Yeah, I'm not aware that that's something that's been implemented. It wouldn't just work by default.
Okay.
We'd have to do something.
We don't have aliasing yet. Sorry.
Okay.
Not yet.
Question, if you can separate out for these components, or you can separate out C# and the HTML.
We've gotten that question for a long, long time. A lot of people, they see the code in the component, like this my component one, and they see this code here, and they're like, I'd really like to have that in a code behind file. Absolutely, you can do that. So like the way you can do it today is I would add my component one dot razor dot cs. That's the way we normally name the file. There, I guess it doesn't nest when it's in a Razor class library. That's probably because it doesn't use the web SDK. But normally, if it was in a web app, it would nest. And then you would have this be like your base type. And
you didn't give it a name, that's the reason.
Oh, I messed up the type name, thank you.
Which was convenient, so I should have had a
component one, there we go, and component one, the base, and then derive from component.
No, you want to inherit the other way.
For the base class of the, like.
This is your base class,
yeah.
So inherit from the base class.
inherit from the I know, but this class has to inherit from component base, doesn't it?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were inheriting the opposite way. Sorry, I'm just.
Am I doing it wrong? If I'm doing it wrong, I'm sorry.
Nope. It sounds like you're doing it wrong.
I think it's this way. So my component base, and then this would derive from component base. So this is a component. Is it component base?
It's component base, yeah.
There it is. Okay. And so now you would move your code in here. Like you would basically take the functions block out of here and move it over here. I'm sorry, this is going to take a second. And then in the class file, you would then inherit from that. Now, this is an inheritance model, so you'd have to make things protected instead of private and all that stuff. But if you say inherits from, you know, my component1.base, then the class that gets generated from my component1.razor will now have the members from the base type. I think did I get that right, Steve?
That's correct, yeah. And
this is the issue that you normally hit here, is that these properties, because I had defined them as private, like they're not showing up. So I have to now go back and, you know, make them protected. And then I messed up one of my properties, apparently. String message, and make this protected, and save it. And now these guys should go. Yeah, so then that's the pattern that you can use today. In the future, we want to make it so that these are partial classes, so that we can, you know, just compile them together. That's something that we're working on for hopefully either the next preview update or the one after. I can't remember which one we thought. I think we said we could get it in for preview 5.
I think it was preview 6.
Preview 6. There you go.
Okay. One last question, and then I'll let you get back to your thing. Why the extension of host? Why is that still CSHTML, or why is that CSHTML and not Razor?
Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about that. So host is just a normal Razor page. It's not a component. It's just a normal Razor page like you would do with an ASP.NET Core web app. It's the page that we're using to host the components for the application. And so this page actually will, like you do, when you make a request to the application, this is the page that it initially runs. This is instead of, for example, having an index.html file, just a static HTML file, instead we actually have a, you know, server rendered, Razor page that we're using for the initial render of the app. And then by calling html.renderComponentAsync, all of the components are also being pre-rendered with that page. So the first request not only gets the content of this page and the script, it also gets all of the pre-rendered component content as well. Well, like before, what would happen if you didn't have a pre-rendering, you would just get, like, say, this app element marker in the initial render of the app. And then we would set up the SignalR connection, talk to the server, ask the components to render them themselves, and then update the DOM later. The nice thing about pre-rendering is it means that all of the content is statically available for things like, you know, web crawlers, you know, anything that wants to be able to just make a request to the site and see the content, that just works. So if I refresh this app and look at its source, we see that, you know, all the component content is here. Like, there's all my, you know, my components. It's in that initial request, we got all that content right out of the box. Like, it just happened, as opposed to only seeing, for example, the app element and then having that get updated later. Does that make sense? So that's pre-rendering. Yeah. We added pre-rendering support in preview 3. Like, we had started doing this pattern with the server-side Blazor template in preview 3. Some things that are new, though, in preview 4 is that in preview 3, after that initial render, when the SignalR connection then got set up, it would ask the server to render the components again, and then it would basically kind of blow away the DOM content that was there and render. You basically rendered twice in order to get that initial setup for the page. What we do now is we will actually do a stateful reconnection back to the server to say, you know, you already rendered me. Can I reconnect back now to that state and reuse that state again for this application, so I don't have to redo it all again? So if you set up some initial state, then it should still be there. Like, as an example of that, let me go back to the app. Let's clear out a little bit from the homepage. It's a little busy now. Let's just have a counter. But in counter, let's add some initial state that we can pass in. Like, if we add a parameter here, the initial count, and let's make it 0 by default. Okay, and then let's override on init. And there's a little formatting bug. Fix that. Okay, and then if we set the current count initially to be initial count. Okay, now we can pass in an initial count where we want the counter to start at. If we now go back to our index page, and let's say that we want this, actually, what we can do even better is we can have even multiple components that we render in the Razor page. Like you can use components statefully and with a stateful reconnection from your Razor pages. This is really important. Like I think some people are wondering, like, oh, do I no longer use MVC? Do I no longer use Razor pages? And is it all now components? And the answer is no. Like these things actually compose together. Like if I want to add a counter right here, let's add it at the top. Let's add like a div, and let's add await the HTML.render components async, and let's add a counter component right here. And then here we can also pass in some initial state. So I'm gonna we can set parameters using an anonymous object. So let's do initial state equals, I don't know, 10. All right, and save that. Good. Okay, let's go back to the application and close this. And so hopefully we should now see our app, and then above it we should see, you know, just a what did I do? Does not have a property initial count. Ah, it's a problem with lack of strong typing in this case. All right, initial count. No, I just did it wrong. Doesn't have initials. Did I say? There's an issue with the auto rebuild with this latest tooling that doesn't work with the Razor pages, so I actually have to rerun it. Okay, great. So at the top, you see we have a counter component rendered directly from the Razor page, and it has that initial state, and it was preserved. Like it didn't get like blown away on the next render. It's there. So you can now render stateful components from any Razor page and have that just work.
Yeah, that thing you pointed out, I think, is really, like you said, is really powerful to know that you can just sprinkle in, if you just want a Blazor component in a Razor page or in a Razor application, Razor pages application, you don't have to rebuild and rewrite. Like I saw that long ago, I did a lot of Silverlight dev, and I saw people would like try and write an entire website with all the navigation and everything in Silverlight. And it's like, why would you do that? Just all you needed was a video player, or all you need, you know what I mean? And so it's like sprinkle in, just like target the right thing. If you're writing a mostly HTML website and you have one page that's a dashboard with some charts, just put your grid and charts in as Blazor components, you know? You can pick and choose.
Enables that scenario, exactly right. And I want to make sure, I answer the question about pre-rendering and like dealing with events, because I know that's been an issue for some people. Often what happens is because we're pre-rendering the app, well, on that initial render, you don't have a connection set up between the browser and the server. You're doing the initial render. You're bringing down the first batch of HTML so that you can set up that SignalR connection. And so if you had code in your components that was trying to do, say, JavaScript interop, well, you don't have any code running on the browser even yet. So that code would then just fail. So one of the pieces of feedback we got with Preview 3 is it would be nice if there was a way you could tell that you were pre-rendering, and that it'd be nice if there was a way that you could delay any initialization code that you needed to run that required JavaScript interop to a later stage after the pre-rendering had completed and after the app was now connected. So you can do that now. If we go, let's go to like index.razor. If we want to know that this app is pre-rendering, there's a new service that you can use to do that. You can inject an I component context, and I'll just call this component context. And then if we put in here, let's put a header to component context dot is connected. So this property will tell you, is the app currently set up with a live connection between the browser and the server? So let's do is connected, question mark, and that, okay. And then when the app renders, it'll render what the state for whether you're connected or not. If you then want to know when the connection has been established, the right place to do that will be in the on after render async event. So it would be override on after render event. Ah, crazy formatting. This is a crazy night to build a VS. Okay, so this event will now, we guarantee that this will fire only after the connection has been set up and you can now, and you're ready to do JavaScript interop. So you should delay any JavaScript interop logic that you have until this point. And I think, I don't know why it's this complaining. Is it complaining because?
This has to be marked protected.
Yeah, okay, great. Yeah, so if you have JavaScript interop, you would do it here that you need for initialization. This will only happen after the pre-rendering has completed. So that will help you out. Just to see that this works. I'm also gonna put a button here with an onClick handler so that we can refresh the rendering of the page to see that the isConnected has switches to true after the app has connected. And I'll just put a little dummy like function in here, like let's do this console left right line, I guess. Did I spell that right? Console right line refresh.
Okay, good. Just close your quotes and.
Yeah, why am I getting a second quote? Okay, and then refresh. Well, let's refresh. So by clicking this button, this refresh button, that should force the component to re-render, because we always re-render after a click. So let's do.
Oh no, there is actually an extra paren at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Is that right? No, I have a paren here at the beginning.
Yeah.
It was right, wasn't it? That's right.
Yeah, it looks right.
That looks right. Okay, great. Extreme programming. Okay, so initially, during the pre-render phase, we're not connected because we're rendering from the server. So connected is false. And if we click refresh, then now, well, it knows that the connection has been established and we're now connected to the server. So. And then put all of your stuff that you need to happen after the connection has happened in on after render async. So hopefully that will help out with some of the pain points that people had with the pre-rendering support that we had in preview 3. Do we have time
There's
for one more?
We'll go ahead. One more question that's come up quite a bit, which is support for authentication.
So authentication is something we've been working around already. Like Steve actually has been done a bunch of design work on what we want to do in the authentication space. We haven't implemented it yet. We did the design work, and now we've queued up the implementation work. I think we've queued that one up for preview 6 as well. So probably, May, June timeframe is when we would expect that to ship. Steve, I don't know if you want to mention a thing or two about what you're thinking there.
Sure. Okay. So the basic idea with the authentication is that for server-side Blazor, we will completely piggyback on the existing authentication and authorization work that exists inside ASP.NET Core already. So whatever your HTTP context.user is, that will be the user that we claim you are to all your components. We will add a little bit of new stuff to that. We'll add some service or event that you can subscribe to be notified when the current user changes. That's a new thing for server-side ASP.NET Core, because in the past, the currently logged in user never changed, like because the entire process only was the duration of a single request. But now the user is connected statefully for a long time. They might log in and out as different people, so you might need to get notifications of that. And then for client-side execution, we are going to provide some abstractions that allow you to provide your own way of defining who the current user is. Built into the template will be a suggested way of doing that relies on server-side logic. If you are wanting to deploy a completely standalone Blazor client-side app that doesn't have any .NET on the server at all, then obviously you wouldn't be able to use that, and it would be up to you to provide your own different implementation of the interface that defines who a person actually is at any given moment. We will also provide a bunch of built-in components that make it easy to display different content depending on whether the user's logged in, whether they're in certain roles or have certain claims, or whether they satisfy different policies.
Yeah, there'll be a full authentication and authorization story coming up in probably two previews from now. Not it won't be in preview 4. We did a lot of design work in preview 4. Preview 5 will probably be a pretty short milestone, so we're not going to squeeze it in there. But early summer for us, it'll be like June-ish timeframe, I think you can expect the first draft, I guess, or first implementation of the auth and authorization work. Cool. I see also a question about is connected and what does that mean in the WASM world, in the WebAssembly world. Well, there's no connection like in a WebAssembly-based application, you're running completely in the browser. So it just always, I believe, always returns true. Is that right, Steve?
Yeah. It's always true.
Always true. Cool. A couple more things, John, just to show you. So I don't know, people probably noticed that as I was like editing code, like about an, I don't know, random edit to this file, I'm saving, and then over in the browser, it's something the UI like changes. It's like, I'm attempting to reconnect to the server. Like, what is that? Like, what is going on there? Well, remember, server-side Blazor apps are a connected model. Like, the UI requires a connection to the server in order to function. Now, this build of Visual Studio has the auto rebuild re-enabled again. So that's good. That's coming back. Where you edit the code, you save, it detects the change, it then kills the app, rebuilds it, restarts it, and then you just refresh the browser to see the changes. So every time I'm editing a file then, the server is actually being killed. Like IIS Express is being shut down. And so the connection is being lost, and the app is detecting that. And that's important, right? If you have a user who's using the app and they lose their connection, the app's not functioning, you need to give them some sort of feedback that the app is currently not in a functioning state. Now, the app will try to reconnect. That's new in this release. It has a reconnection logic where it will try to reconnect back to the server and reconnect to the back to the same state that it was using previously. If it can't do that, then you end up with this version of the UI where it's like, hey, I tried to reconnect. I wasn't able to. You can click the button to try again. In this case, obviously, that won't work because the server is not even up. Like the state that I had before got lost when the server was taken down and then pulled up again. But if we do a full refresh of the browser, we're back and connected. We're now pointed at the IIS Express instance that came back up after it was rebuilt and restarted. If I were to simulate, say, like a network connection drop, let's see what happens then. So there is an API that I can do to just sort of kill the WebSocket connection that's currently being used. What is it, like Window, Blazor, and it's some internal API. It's not something that you would use in your app, but for demo purposes, it works. This forced close connection will kill the WebSocket connection, but it leaves the server running. Like IIS Express is still there. The state that's being managed for the components on the server is still there, right? Hit that. Then you can see, oh, I lost my connection. I'm attempting to reconnect the server. Oh, okay, we're back. And all my state is still there. If I add, you know, a couple of count increments and rerun, you know, force the connection to close, do I lose my current count to 6? No, it's still there. We're still good. So reconnection is now there where we can reconnect back to the same state on the server. If you want to customize that UI that's shown when the connection gets lost, there's a way to do that. You add an element with a particular ID. Actually, I think I'll skip. We'll have details on that in the upcoming documentation. But you can change how that UI looks so that you can provide the experience that you want for your users. So that's automatic reconnection. And last thing I'll show is like let's just look at the client side as well. We've been looking completely at the server side version. Let's go ahead and do file new project, and just quickly create a new. Let's create Blazor app 2. Instead of doing server-side Blazor, I've also installed the v6 to bring in the client-side Blazor templates. For some reason, they're up here at the top. They're not grouped together. We'll fix that so that your Blazor stuff is in one spot. Let's go ahead and create a client-side Blazor app. And the thing to notice here is just that, the templates have been cleaned up. So the client-side Blazor templates are now also using .razor consistently. I think in Blazor 0.9, they were still using .cshtml. That's now gone. We use .razor consistently for all components. And all the normal tooling stuff works here. Like if I want to go mess around with counter, I can do that. If I did that in Visual Studio, that would be the demo that you've probably seen for like the past year and a half. But instead of doing it in Visual Studio, why don't we do something different? So I'm going to actually go to Visual Studio Code. Let's open up Visual Studio Code here. I've installed the latest C# extension update, which is, I believe, 1.19. There it is. And let's go ahead and open up that folder where I created the client-side Blazor app. Where was it? It's like Blazor app 2, right? This one? That looks good. Okay. We have done a bunch of improvements to the Razor tooling for Visual Studio Code. So hopefully now, let's see, can I like add a counter component to my homepage? I'm getting coloring, that's promising. So are we gonna do this? Maybe I gotta build first, I don't know. This is still preview tooling support. Let me see if I can get this to work. Oh, come on, don't do this. Yeah, just needed a second. So OmniSharp is the language service that's used for Visual Studio Code. Sometimes it takes a minute for it to get up and running. There it is. So there's my counter. So I can add a counter component here. That's great. What about just like, you know, binding and all that great stuff? Like let's do to-do list real fast. I'm gonna add a to-dos.razor. Okay, let's see. What do we get here? So at page, do I get it? Yeah, okay, page directive. I'm getting completions on. So to-dos, let's just add a to-dos header here. Let's add a functions block. I need a type. Let me just add a to-do item class, to item.cs and namespace. This is just, of course, C#. So names, what's the name? Blazor app 2. Namespace, Blazor. What? I mean, no names. Namespace. I don't know why that's complaining. But public class to do item prop. Great. So let's give it a string title. And a bool is done. Okay. So we've got a little class now. Awesome. And then. Oh, I know. I put it in the solution. That's why it's like, yeah, move that there. There, that will be better. Is that gonna go away now? Go away. Okay, and then here, let's start doing some more Razor-y stuff. So and Blazor-y stuff. So a list of to-do item, awesome. To-dos equals new list of to-do item. So all the normal C# stuff is working. Let's go do some Razor-y things. So let's create another list at for each bar to do in, do I get IntelliSense here? Yes, awesome. And then let's go and add some list items for each item in the to-do list. So to-do, yep, get IntelliSense there. Do I see my title? Yep, awesome. All right, what about like bind and click handlers? So let's add an input here. So placeholder, do something, dot, dot, dot. Let's just add an input and a button, add. Okay, now we need something to bind to. So let's add a string, new string, new to do, and then a click handler event. So add to do, and we can do some stuff here like if string is null or empty, the new to do. So all the IntelliSense seems to be working great. And then what do we do? If it's not null or empty, let's add it to the to do's list. Add new to do item, title, yep, equals the new to do that we're gonna bind to in just a second. And then we should probably clear it out afterwards, equals string.empty. Perfect. Okay, can we bind to these things? Let's try and do a bind. Bind shows up, great.
Yay.
Let's do like new to do. Yeah, we get IntelliSense for the things that we can bind to. Can we add a click handler on click? That's just normal HTML, so we expect that to show up. But what if I wanna bind to a C# method? Add to do shows up. So
what?
So full Blazor.
People are very, very happy to see this.
Blazor IntelliSense in Visual Studio Code. So if you want to like, you know, work on a Mac, you can now do that. Now this does require preview 4 of the .NET Core 3.0 SDK. So if you try this with preview 3, like with the Blazor bits that are publicly available right now, it's not going to work. So wait for the preview 4 release, or go ahead and grab a nightly build if you want to just try it out now. But you will need a preview 4 build. But as soon as that's out, then this tooling is available for Blazor.
Very exciting. Wow. Okay. I'm trying to see if there's more. No, people are very happy to see that. That is really cool. So I'm trying... What's next? These are all you're showing. These are preview bits and stuff. You've talked about the timeline.
The release should be hopefully any day. Like I don't actually even have the exact day. Very, very soon. There should be the preview for of .NET Core 3.0 along with a Blazor update, a Blazor on WebAssembly update. Things that are next, things that we're working on. We're working on a whole bunch of stuff. So the support for static assets in component class libraries, We've had that in client-side Blazor for a while. Like, we in fact still have a Blazor class library template that sets up some MS Build magic that allows you to have JavaScript files and CSS files or whatever content you want in a class library that can then be used in Blazor apps. We haven't really had that for server-side Blazor in the .NET Core 3.0 world. We didn't bring it over because we wanted to build something that we knew would work across the board for ASP.NET Core. So we're working on our static files story in class libraries in this next preview. So hopefully we should have something to share there in the next preview update. What else is coming? We are working closely with our friends on the runtime team, on the .NET runtime, the Mono guys, on ahead of time compilation support for WebAssembly. They have working now mixed mode support in the IL interpreter. What that means is that the IL interpreter can now handle a mixture of .NET IL, like, you know, just DLLs, and also ahead of time compiled WebAssembly code that where you took like your C# code and just said, just compile this part all the way to WebAssembly. The IL interpreter now can handle an app that has a mixture of those two things. What that should enable us to do is to take parts of the base class library of CoreFX and ahead of time compile that to WebAssembly so we can get much better performance for critical paths in the framework. And then in the future, we hope that even that will become a tool chain that app developers can even use to optimize parts of their app that are performance critical so that they are ahead of time compiled to WebAssembly while the rest of your app can just happily stay as .NET IL. That's something that we're working on. Steve mentioned the authentication and authorization work. Partial classes is coming. There's a bunch of stuff.
People asking about client-side debugging.
Yeah, so the client-side debugging is there, and it's getting incremental improvements. There is support for inspecting like full objects, like complex objects now in the debugger in this next update. The improvements in this next Blazor preview will be fairly incremental, though. Nothing too dramatic, but it is something that we are working on. We also do have now the pieces in place from the Mono team, not for this coming release, but for either the next one release or one after that, where you should be able to attach Visual Studio to the client-side Blazor application and start debugging from within VS. The infrastructure release is there, and we've done like prototyping and demos of it. That we hope that that's something that we'll be able to enable soon as well. But honestly, there's still quite a bit of work to be done in to just have full fidelity in the client-side Blazor debugging story. That's one of the reasons why client-side Blazor won't be shipping with .NET Core 3.0. It'll ship sometime later. It's to allow for time for us to do things like, you know, finish the debugger, get the runtime completely done, have, you know, support for mixed mode AOT and all these things, size reduction. Those are all things that still need to be done for .NET on WebAssembly.
Cool. Wow, this was great. There's a lot of great stuff. It's a lot of chat going on too. There's a lot of people watching and a lot of excited response to what you've been sharing. So this is great. Should we wrap up?
Sure. I know if people still have questions that we didn't get to, like, feel free to, you know, ping us on the in GitHub issues on the repo or find us on Twitter. We'll be happy to chat with you more. If you liked what you see, you know, download Blazor, give it a try. Fill out our survey. We still have the in-product survey for the client-side Blazor templates. We read that feedback, and thank you for everyone who's already done that. And we are on the road now to turn Blazor into a shipping product.
Hooray! All right. Well, with that, it's time to say goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye. Bye, folks.